Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Nick Bailing. As promised, we wanted to get an episode in to start off February the right way, which is in contrast to clearly how the UFC would like to start out February, as we will get to the card this weekend that seemingly has one thing of interest, I think. I mean, I don't know, Nick, your thoughts on this. I'm a huge Korean Zombie fan. I'm glad that he's back. I'm glad that he's off of his South Korean self-imposed military service. In that country, you have to serve 2 years. His 2 years came up, and that's where he's been for the past 2 years. And we will talk about all of that. And specific, Nick, I'd like to talk to you about the idea of ring rust, because it's not as if, like, he's been injured sitting on a couch. He's been training in the military, so I would, you know, I kind of want to get your thoughts on that. But before we get there, I want to kind of rewind the clock a little bit and talk about last weekend, because last weekend was a much more polished card, a much more impactful card, a card with some real implications. I mean, outside of the Bermudez-Jung fight, like, there aren't really implications on the rest of this card. So this past weekend, though, you've got Shevchenko, who beats Juliana Pena at her own game and then gets a face-off with Amanda Nunes, right? Live on TV. You've got some real heat build up here. I think from a fan perspective, I think that division is going through some transition, you know, from its super media star power to now it's two athletes fighting for a belt, right? Like, neither of these two are going to be on Ellen anytime soon.
Well, and on top of that, the person who was gleaned with star power lost their two fights and jumped to 145. So the person that Holly Holm,
right,
who got the head kick, is now having to step out of that division because she hasn't won in the past few. And, you know, maybe it was a weight cut thing that she's moving up, but I'd say that it's because she's offered a title shot at 145.
Well, and I think maybe she sees the Ronda Rousey path to purchase, so to speak, right? I'm going to go up to 45. I'm going to beat Jermaine. I'm going to have the belt. And then there isn't – who else is fighting at 45, right? Like, it's in its infancy. So you might see a year or two of Holly Holm if she wins, right? Like, it's not like Jermaine is – even if you don't know who she is, trust me when I tell you this, it's not like it's a walk in the park. But if she gets by her, there's really no one else at 45 except for Cyborg. If Cyborg can – you know, and it's Cyborg's belt to lose, but there are a lot of if-then statements to even get Cyborg involved in that fight.
Well, they've got what I think it's at least an 18-month with her, with her suspension. So, I mean, that alone is you've got 18 months of the boogeyman gone.
Yeah.
And I don't, there's not really a 145-pound division unless, of course, you've been watching Invicta for the last few years on Fight Pass, where there's talent there, but it's not the UFC-level talent. There might be one or two, but I'm saying like a stable of people that will be stepping up and ready to fight in that division.
And I haven't read anywhere that they're just going to, similar to what they tried to do at 125, they're not disbanding 145 and Invicta and bringing them all up like they did with the Ultimate Fighter to start that division. You know, because you've got Hill fighting this weekend, who was on that season of the Ultimate Fighter, Tisha Torres, Herring is fighting, who's also was on that season. So they don't seem to be doing that, like bringing everybody from Invicta up to like fill that rankings. But it remains to be seen. We're a week ahead of talking about, is anyone going to give you $60 for that fight? We're a week ahead of that. My point being, this past weekend, I thought there was some really interesting stuff that happened on a card that I think a lot of people could have slept on. If you weren't a Donald Cerrone fan, I think a lot of people probably slept on this card.
Well, yeah, I mean, that brings up the Shevchenko, the Donald Cerrone fight happened, but you saw Ngannou really step up in that card that day.
And Ngannou, I mean, he looked like in beast mode. I know he's been calling out Cain Velasquez. I love that fight if Cain could be healthy, but I think that's the, you know, that's the thing right now, is Cain actually able to make it through a whole camp?
Well, and Ngannou, has he proved himself to be someone who could stand up there with, you know, Stipe today?
Yes,
I don't know.
Right now. You think? For a second. Yes. Let's do that next month.
But in the world of dinosaurs that is the heavyweight division, he's the best prospect to be up there and be the next challenger. I mean, not only does he have the look, he's got the whole persona going on. And I just think that he's their next star at the heavyweight division if they can play that right and he can keep getting wins.
Yeah, he has to keep getting wins. And to your point, should he fight Stipe? No, because we need to build a story. Because this fight was on Big Fox, which was awesome. But I think you need to get a couple more cracks at the bat before we should put you on pay-per-view for the heavyweight title. And I think if you could somehow get Ngannou and Cain to headline a Fox card, now we're talking. Right?
Yeah.
And you and I were talking before the show that this year already, 2017 already, has a totally different feel to the UFC than it did just last year. You know, even this weekend, like, this card is, it's not great, guys. It's, I mean, I won't say it's garbage, because there's some people on here you might be a fan of, and maybe you're looking for fights that are free on Saturday night, so it's not garbage, but the last 6, 7, 8, 9 years, it's been one of their biggest cards of the year. And this isn't even, I mean, this isn't even in that ecosystem, let alone that trajectory or that planetary system.
Well, I mean, after the sale, obviously it's going to take a little while before they find their legs and figure out how WME is going to be handling this as an organization. But you can start to see the difference now of this is the, I believe, the first one where WME and their executives and their team has made the poster, and just the difference in what it looks like. So
yes.
If the poster is indicative of what they're planning on doing with the UFC in and of itself, it's just it's going to be a change, and it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it, especially when you have Dana gone counting his money and he's not the one up there saying this is why we're doing it and I don't care what you guys think. It's a left to the shadows a little bit more about why they're doing the things that they're doing. If you would have asked him 2 years ago why they're not doing their Super Bowl card this year and why they're not star-studding it with everybody that they're used to doing it, they would have been like, because that's the way we're doing it. And he would have gave you an answer, and I don't know what it would have been. But now it's all happening behind the scenes, and you don't have that front man who's making it so that at least we all understand or hate him for it.
Well, and as we were saying yesterday when we were talking about that, he's also clearly not as on the ball as he used to be. You saw the story last week right after the Fox post fight when somebody asks about Amanda Nunes going to up to 45. Was she going up or going to, I don't remember. She's going to another division, wants to get a second belt, wants to be just like Conor McGregor. And Dana said, well, she's got to defend her belt first. Bro, she just did. She retired Ronda Rousey literally 17 days ago.
Yeah.
Like 17 days ago. Not even 3 whole weeks ago. 2.5 weeks ago.
Well, and she didn't get that, you know, that warrior's welcome like some of the other people have when she won that card. And actually, I think she saw the repercussions of that because she just released that statement saying that she apologizes for all the mean things that she said about Ronda Rousey after the fight was over.
Well, because, you know, you've got to be in that space where, and you can say whatever you want. You can build whatever repertoire you want to build. But one of the things that goes against foreign fighters in this division is that you're still mostly marketed in the United States, right? So if you're, like, it's a James Bond movie, right? If you're of foreign nationality and you have an accent and you're talking crap about Ronda Rousey, guess what? You're now the heel,
right?
So you either need to embrace that heeldom and be the bad person, but if that's not your core competency, if Amanda Nunes wants to be the hero, which I think is a much better play, the first openly gay champion in the entire mixed martial arts universe, like, being the good guy, probably a much better marketing play than being the bad guy.
Well, to be fair with all of this, she didn't even get, like, any promotion time leading
none
up
at all
to this fight.
But I think going after Ronda isn't going to help that.
No, that's the thing. Like, she has to realize that she's the champion defending her belt, and now she's starting from zero. Nobody knows who she is. If anything, the casual fan, I think it's kind of funny. There's a distinction, and this is my opinion, between the casual fan who Ronda Rousey is, you know, the MMA fighting sweetheart, and then the hardcore fans like us who were like, why is she getting this kind of promotion? Why is she out doing this kind of thing? Not that I hate on what she's doing outside of the UFC, but when they were handling the promotion the way that it was, we're like, I know that there is an absolute monster waiting for her when she steps into that cage.
Yep.
And that happened, and it almost disappeared because it happened the way that it did.
Yeah, and so that leads us to, you know, it looks like it's Valentina on a collision course with Amanda Nunes. When that will happen, I'm not really sure, but that will be a really, really interesting fight, because what you saw traditionally, and if you, you know, if you're one of those people that is not super into the sport and just a casual observer, I know we've got a lot of those on this show, it looked as if Valentina was a well-rounded mixed martial artist, which she is, but her core competency is knocking suckers out, right? Like, that's her thing that she does. So I was fascinated that it was almost a statement to Amanda Nunes. That, like, I get it. You're really awesome at striking. I get it that you're a black belt. Guess what? Here, I'm going to take Juliana Pena, who should eat me alive on the ground. I'm going to break her arm in three places.
Well, I mean, for this next fight, if we've queued this up properly and this fight happens, It might be the most anticipated fight for me coming up in the women's division ever.
Sure.
I mean, I liked the Holly Ronda fight. I thought that was a good one. I have to say I didn't predict the way that that one would have played out, and I didn't predict how Holly Holm would have lost two fights after it. But as we're sitting here now,
Alexander Gustafsson of the women's division?
Right. And I actually should even say that with the 135 division, because obviously JJ Champion is up there every time she steps into it, but that's more of like, let's see who she's going to murder next.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, so it's not really a fair comparison.
Right, because this is a scrap. I mean, this is a, I don't know what is going to happen. This is...
But I think this fight last Saturday shows, like, only adds to that. Like, when you thought, okay, well, if I get Valentina to the ground, I can at least have a shot at finishing this fight. But that's not necessarily true if she's doing belly down arm bars, you know, to Juliana Pena.
Yeah.
So, super interesting fight this last Saturday with a lot of implications. The one we sort of alluded to, Jorge Masvidal absolutely destroying Donald Cerrone. In, you know, if we're being historically correct, we'll call it two rounds, but it was really in a single round. Like, he should have not come back.
Just from a straight up concussion standpoint, that fight was over. I felt like Herb Dean was stepping in. It was Herb Dean, I believe, stepping in to end that fight. His hands were in the air. I've never seen a guy end a round with hands in the air like that.
Right.
And he maybe made a choice, and he's saying, okay, well, I know that Donald Cerrone's this tough, and I think he's one of the best, so I really can't say what he was doing at that point. But that fight was over, and he was out on the stool, and there's a lot of people that could have ended that fight properly. The doctor, the commission, the ref, or Greg Jackson, and sure. I don't think anybody that...
Well, and I don't think, Nick, like, you never... When do you see that? You never see that.
Yeah,
Saved
by the bell is one thing. If you're getting, like, ground and pounded, and you're, like, maybe two or three more shots and this thing's over, like, it was over. He waved it off. I mean, it was not what I like to see, and I like to see knockouts. I mean, you know, that's why I'm watching the sport.
Sure. So, what are your thoughts on Cerrone's performance? Because he, you know, I know we talked about this a little bit earlier, but, like, he didn't seem like the guy who was 4-0 at welterweight.
He, you know, everyone always says, well, what Donald Cerrone is going to show up and what is he going to do? And this time, everyone says, oh, well, his head movement wasn't there. Well, if you know anything about striking, your head movement is set up by your footwork. And his feet were flat. He was fighting off of his back foot. And that's not the kind of fighter that Donald Cerrone is. He's got great counters, but he comes forward with his attacks, and that's what he's doing. And I just didn't see that happening at all. And his flinching, everyone says keep your chin down, and that's fine. But his flinching was up and back, which was tucking his chin really awkwardly. And if you've ever been punched while your chin is in that position, it is not a good spot to be. And that's exactly where the punch that knocked him out happened.
And, you know, I asked you, you know, when you look at how busy he's been, he fought four times in 2016, the most recent one being in December. You almost wonder, dude, take a rest. Like, I get it that you want to be busy. I certainly get it you want to fight in your hometown. But if you wanted to fight in your hometown, maybe you didn't take the Matt Brown fight. I don't know. It just seems like – it seems to me that when you look at that fight, it didn't seem very Donald Cerrone-esque and seemed as if he'd had enough. Like, he should take a break for a minute.
He didn't leave the Matt Brown fight unscathed.
No, it was three rounds of, you know, fighting Matt Brown, which is like fighting a tiger. Like, even if you beat the tiger, like, you're not going to be the same.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's, you know, they allowed it. The commission let it go. But that was a scrap in and of itself. And I've watched Donald Cerrone do something where he's jumped back in the ring pretty quick. But it's usually because he has something that's like, I'm out. I win. Get me on to the next one. My foot's a little bunged up because I, you know, kicked the guy in the head and, like, bowed. But this one was like, he was in that scrap. And the recovery process of somebody like that, I know he says that he doesn't spar anymore because of head trauma, but I don't think he was thinking about it in this sense at all.
Right. Well, and you like to, I like to see fighters getting more into that. Like, the, you know, eating up rounds in the gym, because you only, I mean, if you guys listen to Joe Rogan's podcast, he'll tell you all the time that your head only gets X amount of shots. You know, you've got a jelly bean jar of jelly beans, and once you're out of jelly beans, you're not, you know, you're the Iceman. You're Chuck Liddell being knocked out by feathers, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you. One day, you feel them, and it's different. And a lot of people deny it. They'll say that it won't happen. But there's something that you used to eat and say, this is fine. And then the next thing you know, you're like, that affects me. And it affects me for, you know, maybe it's nothing that knocks you out, but it's something that affects you for 2 or 3 days. And then that's amplified by if you go back in and do it again. I'm actually a big fan of listening to Donald Cerrone's concept and how he's doing it, how Greg Jackson's gym is doing it, and how the Thais do it. You know, they'll go hard, they'll go to the body, they'll get their workout in, but there's no reason to hit that ticker on your teammate. You have to be responsible for that person and know that you're actually there, and you have to appreciate the fact that they're helping you get better. And, you know, that's Donald Cerrone's thought now, but he'll go 6 weeks after you just got into a fight where they're going full-fledged at each other and right. Do it again.
Right. Well, and I just think this time around, it looked like that caught up to him. And, you know, I don't know that I forget who it was that wrote the article. I think that's it's a really great next step if they can pull it off. I don't think this is the end of Donald Cerrone because he lost one fight at welterweight. Somebody either on MMA Junkie or MMA Fighting, one of those two, wrote that they thought him and Condit should be the next thing, which I don't know that I could. I might love that more than the Amanda Nunes Valentina fight, because I think Condit and Cerrone would be a really interesting fight.
Oh, it'd be a great fight.
You know, if you think back to the Carlos Condit Dan Hardy fight, like, that's what I feel would happen. The Cowboys, like, we're going to stand in the middle and throw until one of us falls down.
Well, I'm actually interested to see what happens with Cerrone now. This is the first time where I watched him not to, like, just to be starched, to just right back onto his back like that. Usually when he's losing, it's because he gets kicked in the tum-tum,
yep.
And then he falls down and gets, you know, a couple
boy,
shots, but
boy,
he stands back.
Boy, does he hate the tum-tum.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. That is not his favorite thing by any stretch.
not at all.
The punch that he got hit with wasn't something where you're like, oh, really? Like, he was coming in. His chin was in the wrong spot. It was an inside punch. It was a great punch. It would have knocked out anybody.
It wasn't a Paul Daly flying knee.
It wasn't that bad, but it was like, I don't think that is a testament to his chin, but the next fight will be a testament to how does his chin recover.
Sure. And I think that's the biggest question going into this, but I if they're going to do that, I love that. As much as I think Masvidal beating Cerrone puts him on the map, I don't think, I mean, and you've been seeing it on Twitter and all, you know, all over the MMA blogosphere. He doesn't get to leapfrog Damian Maia, guys. Like, that. Like, whoever is saying that stuff is, like, aside from Masvidal, who should say that stuff, but Masvidal is trying to do what he's doing for himself. Beating Donald Cerrone, who is 4-0 at welterweight, does not make you jump Damian Maia to stand next in line behind Wonderboy Thompson and Tyron Woodley. That, I'm sorry, guys, that's not how this works.
Well, if you're looking at it from a star power perspective, I would say Damian Maia or Masvidal is just a toss-up. There's not one where you're like, well, it's because it's him. He gets to go out there and do this. Like, they're both, like, It's not a thing for me. I'd much rather see Damian Maia get out there and see if he can strangle people for it.
Well, and I just, I mean, I'm not even talking star power. Like, it's just the guy deserves it. He's won six in a row, and he's been sitting quietly waiting for Wonder Boy and Tyron Woodley to figure this thing out. And look, the way that that fight ended, I'm not the one who's like, okay, Tyron moves on, and it should be a rematch, because I think you literally could have tossed a coin and given the belt to whichever person you wanted to, because that was a super, super close fight. Super close.
Super Boy?
Super Wonder Boy close. But I just don't think that, you know, Masvidal gets to jump that by beating Donald Cerrone. And, you know, he's been an active fighter. He's been winning a bunch, but he lost to Ally Aquinta, Benson Henderson, and Lawrence Larkin in the last 3 years. And he's only won three in a row against Ross Pearson, who he looked okay against. He beat Jake Ellenberger. No one cares about Jake Ellenberger. And finally beat Donald Cerrone. Is he on the right path? Totally. Is he ahead of Damian Maia in the welterweight division? No, you are out of your mind.
What I find interesting about the Damian Maia thing is that a lot of people are... they'll say that, well, he's a boring fighter, he does that. He's not wet blanketing people. He's going out there aggressive. His striking is exactly what it needs to be to get the fight to the ground. And I'd love to see what he could do against Woodley. I'd love to see what he could do against Wonderboy Thompson.
I'm looking at these rankings while you're talking. They put Masvidal at 5. He jumped 7 spots by beating Donald Cerrone.
Where was Donald Cerrone?
Donald Cerrone would have been at 5. So they just swapped him.
Well, you know, it is what it is, I suppose.
Yes. The ranking system needs a little work. This might be the only time. I'm sure there's other times if I paid more attention to the rankings, but this clearly might be the only time I'm glad they kicked me off the rankings, so I have nothing to do with this, because you guys are crazy. That's totally crazy. Okay, and then the other story I sort of wanted to talk to you about, because I thought it was interesting, is the Travis Brown story that's going around. You know, there was rumors that he had finally left Edmund and got back to the Travis Brown of old, and he was on the 5-Round podcast, ESPN's 5-Round podcast, and he said, no, he's still my coach. And I think the most telling quote, and I would love to get your reaction to this, is that I went to him for footwork and handwork.
Oh, no.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. Maybe, and I'm just saying this is maybe, this is him being a, for lack of a better term, a paper coach. Like, he's still calling him the coach, but he's doing his camp elsewhere because he knows that he can. Because I used to watch him and think, how does a man that big have that kind of footwork? And how is he so elusive? It was like watching a Condon at 250 pounds or whatever he stands at normally. And now he's standing there with feet cemented to the ground just trying to throw hands.
Well, and you know, his next fight is against Derek Lewis. And, Derek Lewis, I think, is what we thought Travis Brown was 5 years ago. Like, Derek Lewis is not, to me, is not a guy that you can sleep on. And I know Travis Brown is hyperbolic in nature and talking about, I'm going to show that guy the mistake he made by calling me out. But if you've watched the Travis Brown fights since he's been with Edmund, it's been bad, bad news. He has not gotten better. He's gotten worse. Like you said, he's cemented to the ground. His feet are pointing in the wrong direction. He's not moving. He's not doing the stuff he was doing. I mean, remember, they had to create a rule for him because he was leveraging the elbow rule to end fights brutally up against the cage. And they had to go, yeah, we should. Remember that time we told people you couldn't knee them in the nuts to win a fight? Yeah, we're back there. We need to take this elbow thing out.
Well, the Derek Lewis thing, if I could think anything, it's the last thing you want to be is stationary when you're fighting Derek Lewis. I mean, that guy moving forward is a cannonball. Like, there's no stopping him. He's a juggernaut moving forward. And if you're standing there and you want to get into any kind of exchange whatsoever, it is just an absolute recipe for disaster.
Well, and if Travis Brown gets by him, the guys above him, you know, aren't any easier. You've got Nagano above him at 6. You've got Rothwell above him, JDS, Overeem, Kane, and Verdum. Like, I mean, I know that Travis Brown of old has had some success against some of those guys, but I just, man, when you look at what has happened with Ronda and you look at what has happened with Travis Brown, right, it's all about, in the fight game, like you were talking with Donald Cerrone, it's all about pattern recognition. You know, what is happening on a consistent basis that you can point to and go, okay, they went with that guy, and now they're both getting terrible, terrible advice again. You know, and in Ronda's case, I think it's just that the sport caught up to her. You know, she was so far ahead and didn't evolve in the right direction, so that when the people caught up and said, oh, okay, if I just get in her face and don't let her grab me, all we have to do is, you know, play your favorite game of punch kick and, you know, this thing will be over. And with Travis Brown, he's not as explosive. He's not as dynamic. His lateral movement isn't there, you know, with the feet. And like you said, your footwork is really what does all the work to being great at this sport. And I don't know. You can say what you want. I mean, no, you don't want your fighter to dump on his coach. I don't expect him to dump on his coach. I do expect you, though, if this is your profession, to make intelligent decisions, and this does not seem like one.
You know, it seems like us that is the Edmund divide. There was Travis Brown before and Travis Brown after.
Sure.
And there was the Edmund, but he was making his switch there because it was the first time that he tasted defeat. Like, not the first time he tasted defeat, but like he was having trouble, so he went there for those reasons. And so we can look at it that way, but you could also look at it from a confidence standpoint. What he was so great at when he was first fighting is he was controlling the space between the two fighters, and he was controlling it with the range that he had. It's like the Stefan Struve dilemma. You're like, you have the longest limbs in the entire universe, and you can't control the space between you and your fighter. Well, he had all of that. And so like a lot of this could be coming just from a simple confidence issue of he's tasted defeat now, he's been hit, he had that fight with Andrei Arlovsky, and he doesn't have that like just iron confidence that he had at one point. And that's why he's like moving the way that he is.
But you can see, but like you can see the divide in his record. You know, if you go back to the end of 2013, from the start of his career to the end of 2013, he lost a single time to Bigfoot Silva. From 2014 to September of 2016, he is 2-4.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
right.
Like pattern recognition. Something changed, and that change seems like it's your coach. That change seems like the terrible advice that you're getting in the ring or the terrible advice you're getting in the gym. One of the two.
Well, part of the thing, and, you know, I could be totally wrong on this, but with Edmund, he has Ronda, or had, and then he has Travis Brown. And if you look at Greg Jackson and you say, well, okay, well, who is John Jones training with? And there's just a smattering of superstars that can help him. Like, who's really out there helping Travis Brown as a sparring partner? Who's that other person that's not just lifting him up for the camp, but on a daily basis, who's pushing him to be better? And is he looking at greatness on the other side of the ring every time he steps in and just does drills? I'm not even saying sparring with each other. I'm just saying, like, who's that person that's pushing him to be greater? If I'm looking across and I see Andrei Arlovsky every day because I'm at Greg Jackson's camp, I'm going to push myself to be better because I know what they're capable of. Who else is in that gym? And I'm not even sure.
I don't know, but if you Google Edmund Tarverdian, the first three results you get are his Wikipedia page and then these two articles. 5 reasons Edmund is the worst coach in the UFC, and who is Edmund and why do people keep paying him? I'm trying to look and find out. So he's got Travis Brown, Ronda Rousey. And that's it.
Right.
So to your point, like when you're in GFC, who in the Glendale Fighting Club are you facing off with to get you better? Because the thing about Greg Jackson, or the thing about the Black Zillions, or the thing about, you know, American Top Team or Brazilian, like Shoot a Box, whatever, like they were bringing in savages to get their savages better. And, you know, not to say that they're not bringing people in, but it's not about bringing people in. Like I was just, I was in Cleveland 2 weeks ago, and there's a guy that we work with who trains with Stipe. Like, he's not a pro fighter, but he trains at the gym down there at Strongside.
Right.
And I said, hey, what's the biggest change in the gym since Stipe won? And he goes, the biggest change is all of these people that visit. You know, like I look up and Angela Hill is there, and I look up and Tisha Torres is right. Like all of these people are coming into the gym now to kind of get a chance to train with the champ or be around the champ. But then those people leave. And then you've got, what is the core of the gym that's continuing to push Stipe? Who are those guys, right? Because the people that visit are great. You get new looks. You pick up new things. You know, maybe it's in the jiu-jitsu realm or the wrestling realm or whatever. But then they leave, and you've got to execute that against people who are pushing you. And I think back to the way that whatever you think about Frank Shamrock, I've always loved this philosophy that you and I have talked about this plus minus equal, right? So at all times, in order to get better, you have to have somebody who's better than you who's teaching you. You have somebody who's at your level who's testing you, and somebody below you that you're trying to get better. And that's how you continue to grow in, honestly, in just about anything. But if you are in this gym and you don't have that setup in this sport, man, that's why your record looks like that. In this sport, that's why Ronda looks like that, because, you know, she fights twice and retires after it, because there's no one testing her in that way. And there's no one that she's trying to make better. I mean, Betch Kohea ate alive the four people from The Ultimate Fighter that Ronda was coaching.
Right.
Ate them alive.
Yeah. What were they? The
four horsewomen?
Yeah.
You know, like, she ate them alive.
Yeah. Well, maybe they should get them up with a better nickname before they decided to come up.
Right. Or train with Arn Anderson, if you're going to use that nickname. Right. Get Ric Flair and Arn Anderson in there and start learning how to be a horseman, you know? But I really think in this sport, and this has been the interesting thing about this last month, is the cards kind of emulate that, right? Like, the cards don't feel as big as they used to. We lucked out last weekend. It was a great, fun card with a lot of people that most people on Fox had never heard of. But you're not always going to luck out with that stuff. And this weekend might be a clear case of that.
Well, some of the matchups that we have coming up in this, you know, star power, whatever, the matchups, they have the potential. It could be one of those magical nights. But on paper, that's just not what it's looking like. And I'm actually looking at the start time for this in the Eastern Standard Time in which we're sitting in right now, starting at 10 o'clock. And I just don't know if the Bermudez and Jung fight is something that I am even, like, I'm looking at it from a time perspective of, do I want to watch them walk out at 12:30, or do I want to catch that extra hour and a half worth of sleep and DVR the next day?
Right. Because, you know, for the remainder of the month, you've got Houston on Saturday night. And then on February 11th, you've got Brooklyn, which is the Holly Holm, Jermaine Durandamé fight with Anderson Silva and Derek Brunson, Jacare, Tim Bosch, Glover, and Jared Cannonier. Ian McCall's on that. Ryan LaFerre's on that. I mean, George Sullivan got pulled for that for an anti-doping violation. Derek Lewis and Travis Brown, they moved that to the next week to fight night. And that is going to, because the Stefan Struve JDS fight gets canceled. So that one is Derek Lewis, Travis Brown, Hendricks, Lombard, Sarah McMahon, Liz Carmouche. And, you know, goes down from there. And then you've got, on the Bellator side, you've got Fedor Mitrione on Spike on February 18th, which, outside of what I just read off, save for the Anderson Silva fight, which I think is probably the most interesting thing I've just said out loud, Anderson Silva and Derek Brunson is super interesting, because I feel like if there's anything left in the tank, he's going to need it to fight Derek Brunson. And if not, you're going to watch Derek Brunson murder one of the most iconic figures in all of mixed martial arts. It will be like, my sense of it is, it will be worse than when Matt Hughes murdered Hoist Gracie.
Well, if that happens, straight up, it's just the end of Anderson Silva. If Anderson Silva pulls out that ounce of magic, sprinkles the magic dust, and does something, who knows what that is, but he does something. The crazy thing about that is, you know that the next fight for Anderson Silva is going to be either a title eliminator or a title shot, because he's that guy.
You get him in the title shot. You're running out of time.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. we're out of time here. But, like, the rest of this month doesn't really look all that spectacular. And even for the rest of the year, as we wait for Conor McGregor to come back and, yeah, you've got, you know, you've got DC and Rumble too, but I don't know. I'm okay. I mean, I'm lukewarm on that. I don't know that Rumble has evolved enough to best DC. I think DC's fight IQ is better. And that's what I think makes the Jones fight so interesting, because he's already fought him, and that will be, whenever that happens, if that happens, will be the first time that Jones ever is in a rematch. I like DC in rematches. I think that's a better place for him, because I think he learns very quickly and kind of commits that to memory. But outside of that, eh.
Well, I think that the telltale sign of it is that we're looking at essentially the first quarter of this year, and we're picking one or two fights off of each card and saying, oh, that one, oh, that one, oh, that one, where in years past, months past, we'd be saying, I can't believe the next card, because the next five fights on that one card are something that I want to see.
Well, and like, I don't know who made the decision to think that Holly Holm and Jermaine Jermandry is $60 worth, but they're not.
No, I mean, it would be a great, great Big Fox card, yeah, headliner, because she is known, because she's the one that did the thing to Ronda Rousey the first time.
Did the thing, yes.
Yeah, yep. And nobody knows, if you're the casual fan, that she's not been the champ since then.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That could have just went off into the wayside. So that would be a great Fox card, and I'd be excited for that, for the Fox card. But you're talking about the dollars in my pocket and what I'm going to be getting out of it, and that's just, it's just not that for me.
And then you got this weekend, you got the Fox FS1 card, which is the Korean Zombie against Dennis Bermudez. Both guys weighed in this morning at 145.5, so that fight is definitely on. Your thoughts on this and the idea of ring rust being gone for 2 years serving in the military?
For all intents and purposes, ring rust is a real thing. It is something that only one person claimed isn't real, ever.
And that person no longer has a belt, by the way.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's everybody else claims that it's real. You're back into the thing. And then they're not doing any favors by throwing him Bermudez in a 5-round fight to get back into it.
But I guess my sense of the Korean Zombie is he wouldn't want an easy fight.
Yeah, no.
He's a guy that wants to go in there and test himself, and he's a guy that wants to go in there and get a shot back at the belt as soon as possible. And you got to go through Bermudez at some point. And why not now, you know?
Well, the nice thing about it is, like, right now he doesn't have a number next to his name. He's not in the top 10 because he's been gone for so long.
Sure.
And if he goes out there and has a stellar performance, not only is he going to be looking at the top 10, he's going to be looking at probably, like, close to title eliminators, if not up into the rankings.
Well, because Bermudez wants Holloway if he wins. And I don't know if that holds the same for the Korean Zombie. I'd like to see him get one more before we do that. Maybe an eliminator, maybe just one more fight of somebody in the top five. But it should be a super fun fight. If you've never seen the Korean Zombie, you just started getting into the sport within the last 18 months. He's a guy who, his nickname is apt because he takes more punishment than any six humans you've ever seen in the fight game. Whenever that fails him, in the same way it failed Sakuraba, whenever that fails him, it'll be dramatic.
Right.
And horrific. But for now, we're going into Saturday night thinking it's the Korean Zombie of old, who's had 2 years of rest, still working out, still doing whatever in the military, but has not been taking shot after shot after shot after shot in fights. So a lot of things to enjoy about this fight, because it should be a really, really fun one. I'm such a huge Jung fan that I don't want to see Bermudez beating him, so therefore I do not. Which, well, might be wrong, but I do not.
We're looking at a whole division that's just been left in turmoil ever since Connor stepped out of the thing. We've got interim belts, we've got belts, we've got people that have lost that just got handed them. We've got all sorts of weird things going on there. And if anything, they could use a star power to kind of realign what's happening in that division.
They should give him a belt.
Just give him one. Why not?
Featherweight star. That's your belt. You got the star belt.
It's like, you get the intercontinental.
Yeah, totally. It's tag team match belts, intercontinental belts. We should do all, everyone gets a belt.
Yeah, for sure.
Kane and Travis Brown can have the tag team belts. It'll be awesome. Let's just do that. This is a great. This is. I'm glad we did this. This is a great idea. Okay. As always, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook as we figure out what WWE belts should be in the UFC and break down what happens this weekend. It is Way of the Warrior. I am Eric Hulkran. That is Nick Bailing. We'll talk next week. It's your MMA show.